Hey y'all, welcome to this week's episode of Unfit to Print. I'm your host, Amber Athey. I'm the Washington editor for Spectator USA and a Tony Blankley fellow with the Steamboat Institute. Make sure that you subscribe to the Daily Caller's YouTube channel and also search for Unfit to Print on iTunes and SoundCloud. MSNBC, later. Chris Matthews was finally booted off the network after 20 years of sexual harassment, but is that the real reason they got rid of him? Suit and lie. The Trump campaign is hitting the Washington Post and the New York Times where it hurts, in the courts. Hoax goes viral. The media spread a dirty lie about Trump and coronavirus this week, and we're here to set the facts straight. Pray it by ear. The media's war on Christianity is back with a vengeance. Lame Chuck. Republicans pounced or seized on Chuck Schumer threatening two Supreme Court justices this week. Hardball host Chris Matthews is officially out at MSNBC after over two decades with the network. Absolutely insane development on Monday when he gave his shock retirement on air and then walked off and didn't even finish the rest of his show. All of this happened after a series of crazy on-air mistakes as well as allegations of sexism from freelance journalist Laura Bassett. Now, for those of you who follow my work, you know that I've been reporting on Chris Matthews being a bully and a womanizer for 3 years now. Finally, I guess MSNBC got the message. But this all started a couple of weeks ago when Chris Matthews watched Bernie Sanders win the Nevada primary and compared it to the Nazis invading France during World War II. Watch this.
I'm reading last night about the fall of France in the summer of 1940. And the general, Renault, calls up Churchill and says, "It's over." And Churchill said, "How can it be? You got the greatest army in Europe. How can it be over?" He said, "It's over." So I had that suppressed feeling. I can't be as wild as Carville, but he is damn smart.
Then Chris Matthews went after another presidential candidate when he had Senator Elizabeth Warren on his show, and she was talking about these non-disclosure agreements and allegations of sexism against Mayor Mike Bloomberg. And Chris Matthews did not like the fact that Elizabeth Warren was reflexively believing the woman who claimed that Mike Bloomberg told her to kill her baby when he found out that she was pregnant. Now, actually, Chris Matthews is right to question that. We shouldn't necessarily believe all women. There's a such thing as due process, especially in a he said, she said situation. But of course, this type of exchange coming from someone on MSNBC was something that progressives and feminists alike were absolutely livid by. Some people started calling for his firing. Go ahead and watch his exchange with Liz Warren.
But you believe in tobacco? You believe he's that kind of person
real.
Who did that?
Look, pregnancy discrimination is real. And these, we have gone on and on and on where people say, "Oh, I can't really believe the woman." Really? Why not? Yeah. Mayor Bloomberg has non-disclosure agreements for who knows how many women. And it's not just the one. The whole point is, how can you actually trust someone who will not just say, "Look, I'm going to waive on non-disclosure on sexual harassment and discrimination. Yeah. Anybody who has a story to tell can come tell
Sure, I agree
story.
With everybody deserves a credible response when they make a charge like that. My question about him, you believe he's lying?
I believe the woman.
You believe he's
which
lying?
Which means he's not telling the truth.
And why would he lie? Because just to protect himself.
Yeah, and why would she lie? I mean, that's the question, Chris. Why do you assume that he's the guy?
I just want to make sure you're clear about this. You're confident of your accusation.
Look, all I know is what she said and what he said.
And things continued to get worse for the MSNBC veteran when he confused two black politicians, Tim Scott and Jamie Harrison. Lord knows why he thought Jamie Harrison, the challenger to Lindsey Graham, would be sitting next to him at a Trump rally. But lo and behold, this might be one of the most awkward moments I have ever seen on cable news.
Jamie, I see you standing next to the guy you're going to beat right there, maybe. Maybe. Lindsey Graham.
Tim Scott.
Jamie?
Tim Scott.
Who's that?
That's Tim Scott.
I'm sorry. Oh, it's the other senator, Tim Scott. What am I saying? Big mistake. Mistaken identity, sir. Sorry. Tell me how you're going to beat Lindsey. Everybody knows Lindsey.
Finally, freelance journalist Laura Bassett wrote an article for GQ because she was upset about Chris Matthews' exchange with Elizabeth Warren, accusing him of making sexist comments toward her in the makeup room, saying things like, "If you keep putting on this much makeup, I'm going to fall in love with you," telling a makeup artist to take her makeup off after her interview because He didn't want guys at the bar looking at her like that. Just a series of really icky stuff that certainly would make a woman feel uncomfortable if she were appearing as a guest on someone's show. And all of these events culminated in MSNBC actually pulling Chris Matthews off of their South Carolina primary coverage, which for someone who's been at the network for such a long time and has been a core part of their political coverage was really hard to fathom. And people were especially confused because MSNBC didn't comment on his absence. So usually when a host is embattled like this on cable news, they'll say that they're going on vacation or they had a pre-planned reason for not being on air. And MSNBC was silent this entire time, not commenting on why Matthews was suddenly absent from the South Carolina primary coverage. So people started to think there was something a little fishy going on. Lo and behold, come Monday night, after the weekend of him not being on air, he gives his shock resignation and says he's retiring from the network, also known as being fired. He gives this during his opening monologue and then doesn't return for the rest of the show. Here's his explanation for why he's leaving.
After conversation with MSNBC, I decided tonight will be my last hardball. So let me tell you why. The younger generations out there are ready to take the reins. We see them in politics, in the media, in fighting for their causes. They are improving the workplace. We're talking here about better standards than we grew up with. Fair standards. A lot of it has to do with how we talk to each other. Compliments on a woman's appearance that some men, including me, might have once incorrectly thought were okay. We're never okay. Not then and certainly not today. And for making such comments in the past, I'm sorry.
So Chris Matthews drops this bomb on all of his viewers and apparently the rest of the network and just pieces out, doesn't even bother to finish his show. You know, maybe he could have announced this at the end of the program, but he drops it right off the top, walks off set. And poor Steve Kornacki, who was like the most milquetoast data-driven guy on MSNBC, has to come on and fill in for him on the rest of Hardball. And this poor guy looked like he was about to cry on air.
That was a lot to take in just now, I'm sure. And I'm sure you're still absorbing that, and I am too. Chris Matthews is a giant. He's a legend. It's been an honor for me to work with him, to sit in here on occasion. And I know how much you meant to him, and I know how much he meant to you.
So we saw a ton of people saying that the reason Chris Matthews left, and of course during his mea culpa when he was retiring on air, the claim was that it was because of these comments that he made to Laura Bassett. But I actually do not think that is the reason why Chris Matthews ultimately left MSNBC, because back in 2017, I reported on a 1999 separation-related settlement that the network made on behalf of Chris Matthews to a woman who apparently complained about his inappropriate behavior, things like sexist comments and inappropriate jokes that made her feel uncomfortable. Her desk was apparently cleared out overnight after she complained. And then five former producers and guests on Hardball also told me that this was a common practice for Chris Matthews. It was a pattern of behavior that he would often comment on women's appearances in a very boorish way, such as rating them on a scale of 1 to 10, talking about how tight their dresses were, or commenting on their makeup. One woman apparently was made so uncomfortable by this that she refused to be in the makeup room at the same time as Chris Matthews. And then staffers also said that he was an abusive boss. He was prone to fits of rage, would slam papers down on the desk and tell staffers that they were worthless and they didn't deserve to have a job working for him. All kinds of icky things. I mean, this guy, for apparently the past 20 years that he's been at the network, hasn't been behaving in a very unprofessional and aggressive manner. So why now? Why would MSNBC suddenly get rid of this guy after they've known for, again, 20 years that he acts this way? So it couldn't have been just this one essay from this one woman about him making a sexist comment toward her. That's usually not enough to get rid of one of the network's biggest hosts. I think it's actually that Chris Matthews started to run afoul of being woke. He wasn't woke enough for MSNBC anymore. They've been bringing in these younger hosts like Stephanie Ruhle and Ari Melber and Nicole Wallace to some extent. This guy is 74 years old. He's been at the network for a really long time. He doesn't like progressives like Bernie or Elizabeth Warren. And as we get closer to the general election, the MSNBC is going to line up behind whoever the Democratic candidate is. And if that person tends to run more progressive like Bernie Sanders, they need all of their hosts to be able to support him. Chris Matthews simply is not going to do that. And he's also going to get the network in a lot of trouble if he keeps making these gaffes like comparing Bernie to a Nazi or running afoul of the Me Too movement. These are simply unacceptable for a network that is trying to position itself as the media arm of the left-wing establishment Democratic Party. So this, the allegations of sexism and the sexual harassment were really just a convenient excuse to get rid of what was basically a dinosaur at the network so they can bring in younger, fresher talent. So don't for a second think that MSNBC actually cares about women. We already know that they don't. They ignored the Harvey Weinstein story that Ronan Farrow was reporting on and refused to publish it. They protected Matt Lauer, who was allegedly a rapist, for a number of years. Mark Halperin, it took them multiple weeks to get rid of him after five or six women accused him of sexual harassment and doing some really icky things to them. So this network is filled with people who are abusive and leadership who continues to protect them. Don't think that because Chris Matthews was pushed out that this changes any of that. The Trump campaign filed its second lawsuit against a media company this week over allegations of libel. This week, the campaign sued Washington Post. Last week, they sued the New York Times, both outlets for claiming that the Trump campaign was a part of or tried to be a part of a conspiracy with Russia. Now, we know from the Mueller report that they did not find enough evidence to establish that there was any conspiracy or collusion between the 2016 campaign and Russia, and yet that apparently has not stopped media outlets from making that claim. I'm going to read you guys a little bit of the lawsuit against the Washington Post. There are two specific stories that the campaign is taking issue with. The first was on June 13th of 2019, and the article was called, quote, "Trump just invited another Russian attack. Mitch McConnell is making one more likely." Now, in this article, Greg Sargent claims that special counsel Robert Mueller concluded that the campaign, quote, "tried to conspire with a sweeping and systematic attack by Russia." That is obviously the opposite of what the Mueller report found. And then in another article, June 20th, 2019, the article was titled, quote, "Trump, I can win re-election with just my base." And Paul Waldman poses the question, "Who knows what sort of aid Russia and North Korea will give to the Trump campaign now that he has invited them to offer their assistance?" The campaign says this is, quote, "false and defamatory. There has never been any statement by anyone associated with the campaign or the administration inviting Russia or North Korea to assist the campaign in 2019 or beyond." And then again, last week, they sued the New York Times for very similar statements made in an opinion article. Now, Trump obviously has had this war against the media since he started running for office back in 2015. He calls them fake news. He calls them the enemy of the people, and he attacks their reporting quite a bit and calls them out for a lot of the falsehoods that they peddle about him and his administration. But this is really the first time that the campaign has taken legal action against these people. And it's good and bad, I think, because first of all, if these people are selling falsehoods about the president, they should be held accountable. You can't just write whatever allegations you want in print and not be expected to be held accountable when you lie about someone. And this could really give people pause before they continue to smear the president and his administration and his campaign unfairly. At the same time, I think Trump has been so successful in some ways because the media acts as his foil. He's able to criticize them, call them out when they commit fake news. And if you actually sue these people and they stop writing mean things about you, then you don't really have that person, that thing, that entity to attack on the campaign trail, which has been really successful in terms of strategy for the president. But ultimately, if people are writing lies about you, there's a legal system in place for libel and defamation for a reason. And we'll see what ends up happening with these lawsuits. It's very difficult to prove defamation in the court of law. The Trump campaign is asking for millions of dollars in damages, and we'll continue to follow what happens. We're in the midst of a global pandemic with the coronavirus. The CDC is warning that millions of people could be infected in the United States. The Trump administration has assembled a task force and is trying to contain people who have tested positive for the virus. But the media, meanwhile, is playing politics with this. Trump talked about Democrats politicizing coronavirus to attack his administration during a South Carolina rally. And the media as usual, took him out of context and claimed that he was calling coronavirus itself a hoax. That in itself is a hoax because that is not what the president said. And if you watch the full clip, which we are about to show you, you will see that he was talking about Democrats' politicization of the virus.
Now the Democrats are politicizing the coronavirus. You know that, right? Coronavirus. They're politicizing it. We did one of the great jobs. You say, how's President Trump doing? They go, oh, not good, not good. They have no clue. They don't have any clue. They can't even count their votes in Iowa. They can't even count. No, they can't. They can't count their votes. One of my people came up to me and said, Mr. President, they tried to beat you on Russia, Russia, Russia. That didn't work out too well. They couldn't do it. They tried the impeachment hoax. That was on a perfect conversation. They tried anything. They tried it over and over. They've been doing it since you got in. It's all turning. They lost. It's all turning. Think of it. Think of it. And this is their new hoax.
So clearly the president did not call coronavirus a hoax. And by the way, why would he? Why would he be assembling a task force and having daily press briefings about this illness if he thought that it was a hoax? It simply makes no sense. This is exactly what the media did, by the way, with when he called MS-13 animals. Remember that they took him totally out of context. They claimed that Trump was talking about all illegal immigrants and calling them animals. But when you go back and roll the tape, he was talking specifically about the gang whose motto is rape, control, and kill. This is a common tactic by the establishment media where they deliberately take something that Trump said and twist it to give it the least charitable interpretation to try to make him look bad. Well, the good news is that Check Your Fact, which is the fact-checking arm of the Daily Caller, has the access on Facebook to ding people who tell lies. Politico and NBC were both two outlets that claimed Trump called the coronavirus a hoax. So Check Your Fact wrote up a fact check calling this a false statement, and they attached it to the articles by Politico and NBC on Facebook. And so now both of those articles have this big flag on them telling people that this is false information and that it has been checked by independent fact checkers. Well, people on the left were very upset by this because apparently facts only matter if you're a conservative or a Republican, in which case, you know, you could get Snopes'd into oblivion. Judd Legume, who's some left-wing hack, went on this huge Twitter rant about how shameful it is that the Daily Caller is allowed to fact check on Facebook, despite the fact that Check Your Fact has gone through all of these independent verification processes to make sure that they're living up to journalistic standards employed by various journalistic institutions. So they've been checked out and deemed credible enough to run as part of this Facebook fact checking program. So Judd Legume has a huge problem with this and goes on this huge Twitter rant. And he's basically just admitting that this whole left-wing ploy about misinformation on social media, on Twitter and Facebook, is really just a power grab. They don't actually care about the facts in any case. They just want to have the power to flag misinformation so that they can ding Republicans and conservatives. Whenever it flips the other way and the left is caught telling a lie, they don't want anything to do with that. This is all a political game, folks. This has nothing to do with the truth or lies or anything. This is about the left wanting to take control of social media and tell people what to believe. Members of the media reminded us that they hate Christians this week by mocking Mike Pence and the Coronavirus Task Force for praying prior to discussing solutions for how to deal with this pandemic. There was a photo that was going viral on social media that showed Pence and other members of the task force bowing their heads in prayer during a meeting. Now, people who actually understand prayer know that this doesn't mean they're not actually taking steps to deal with the crisis or expecting prayer to fix all of their problems. But a lot of people pray for peace or strength when dealing with a situation that's really difficult. It's supposed to help give them guidance when dealing with a solution. But members of the media, of course, decided that this was something that they were going to make fun of. Thomas Chatterton Williams, who is a contributing writer with the New York Times Magazine, said, quote, Mike Pence and his coronavirus emergency team praying for a solution. We are so screwed. Brian Karam, who is the White House correspondent for Playboy, said clear that VP and real Donald Trump are in over their heads. POTUS is literally praying for a miracle to make coronavirus go away. Jordan Uhl said very excited to hear all about Pence's coronavirus response plan, praying God protects us. And Stephen Colbert said that he's going to rename the National Institutes of Health, Pray Away the Plague. Now, this is a very common theme whenever, for example, there's a gun violence incident and people respond by offering thoughts and prayers to the victims and their families. People who are in the media start attacking them and saying that they don't actually care about people. But people who believe in the power of prayer, like I do, for example, understand that prayer can be a real source of comfort and strength for people who are struggling through difficult times. It doesn't mean that a prayer is going to save someone's life or help develop a vaccine, but again, it's about strengthening yourself through Christ so that you can overcome these difficult situations. But the fact that the media doesn't even try to understand this, it's because they don't really care about religious people or Christians or people of faith at all. They're sad little people who can't even fathom the idea of God's love, and so they have to lash out like this because they are just deeply unhappy. The Supreme Court is currently deciding a case about abortion clinics, and the fight is over whether or not they should be required to have admitting privileges to hospitals in case an abortion goes wrong and a woman needs emergency care. Obviously, abortionists do not like this, pro-choice people do not like this, and there was a rally in front of the Supreme Court this week where Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer spoke to these activists. And during this, he sort of threatened Justices Kavanaugh and Gorsuch by telling them that they will not know what hit them if they go forward with these awful decisions, and telling them that they will pay the price. Watch.
I want to tell you, Gorsuch, I want to tell you, Kavanaugh, you have released the whirlwind and you will pay the price. You won't know what hit you if you go forward with these awful decisions.
Now, I'm not sure exactly what consequences Schumer was alluding to here, considering justices are appointed for life terms. The best that he could hope for is impeaching one of them, but even then, that is so rare. It has only happened one time in the court's history. So there's really no other way to take his statement other than being a threat. And in fact, Chief Justice John Roberts was so disturbed by what Schumer said that he released a very rare statement rebuking him, saying, quote, "Justices know that criticism comes with the territory, but threatening statements of this sort from the highest levels of government are not only inappropriate, they are dangerous. All members of the court will continue to do their job without fear or favor from whatever quarter." Now, after this statement, Schumer and his staff actually doubled down on this and tried to gaslight the American public by claiming that Schumer wasn't talking about Supreme Court justices, but was talking about Republican politicians, which of course is very hard to believe considering he explicitly named Gorsuch and Kavanaugh. And in fact, McConnell and Trump both went after Schumer for this. Trump said that he has brought great danger to the steps of the Supreme Court, whereas McConnell shredded the defense that he offered for making this statement.
The Democratic leader traveled to the workplace of the two judges, and in front of a crowd of activists, he told those judges, "You will pay the price," right in front of the Supreme Court building. "And you won't know what hit you," he said, right in front of the Supreme Court building. If any American had these words shouted at them from a sidewalk outside their office, they would hear those threats as personal. And most likely they would hear them as threatening or inciting violence. That's how any American would interpret those words if they were directed at us. And that's certainly how the press and leading Democrats would have characterized them if President Trump or any senior Republican had said anything remotely similar.
Schumer later walked back this defense and claimed that he wasn't making a threat on the Supreme Court justices, but admitted that he should have used different language when he was speaking to those activists outside the Supreme Court. Despite all of this, despite the fact that there's been near universal condemnation of his comments, the media's response was to talk about how Republicans are pouncing. The Washington Post wrote the headline, quote, GOP seizes on Schumer's remarks, while Politico talked about McConnell pouring gasoline on Schumer, which seems like a really odd phrase to use when you're talking about the Democratic Senate leader potentially threatening Supreme Court justices. Got a little violent there with the pouring gasoline reference. But the story is never about what the Democrat actually did wrong. It always has to be about the Republican response, because, of course, you have to divert the attention away from the wrongdoing so people don't realize that it actually happened in the first place. Thank you all again for watching Unfit to Print. Make sure, again, that you subscribe to the Daily Caller's YouTube channel and search for Unfit to Print on iTunes and SoundCloud, and we will see you next week.